We are parading tomorrow, and I'm glad that it's a night parade, because if it were a day parade, it would be even toastier. But neither here nor there. You know, the hotter it gets, it's summertime. But the more that we go through the summer, we know that college football and the NFL seasons are coming up closer and closer, and there's news every single day, it seems like, regarding the NCAA and NFL. But one of the things that I wanted to ask you about was Aaron Donald, and then we'll jump into some other stuff here, but Aaron Donald essentially says that he is at peace with whatever happens. He wants to get paid his money and thinks he should, but if he doesn't get paid his money, then he's going to retire. I really feel like this is an interesting take. It's a little confusing to me, too, because if it's about money, he's going to get paid by somebody else, if it's not the Rams. But so if it's about money, then I think he would want to play. But it seems like, I don't know, it's almost like he needs to pick and choose what he would like to do, because he's really on the fence about retiring, it seems like. Is it a situation where he just wants to play for the Rams and that's it? Or do you think that there's more going on in his head as to how this decision is going to play itself out?
Well, it's a strategy. It's a strategy that people go through all the time. You take, like, romantically, you say, well, I really wasn't interested in you anyway. It's a way of not getting hurt and making it look like you come on top.
Sure.
He wants to get paid. He wants to get paid, and he wants to get paid bank, and he should get paid. There's not a defender that is anything like him. He's a generational player. There is no way that the Rams are going to let him walk just for, a few million. But it's a strategy, and it happens all the time with contract negotiations, no matter who the player is. I remember Fred Robbins. He played way back in the day. He played for Wake Forest. He was drafted by the Vikings. They offered him, and the New York Giants offered him a contract that was $750,000 more a year, and he took it. And that he just waited it out for the Vikings. The Vikings thought they had him between a rock and a hard place. But that's just how negotiations are. You act like you don't care. You act like he's not going to retire. I mean, he's in the prime of his life. He's a football player. What's he going to do afterwards? Raise chickens?
Probably not. Well, I just think it's interesting because as opposed to saying, hey, I'm going to leave, like I'm going to go somewhere else where they are going to pay me, it's I'm going to retire. Is that just part of the way that you think he's going about, or the way that his thinking is, or and whether he wants to play or not, or wants to retire or not, is it more interesting that he's threatening retirement as opposed to going to a different team who is going to pay him?
Yeah, and that's all in the just strategy, because okay. See, the Rams own him. They don't have to give him any more money if they don't want to. Cooper Kupp's doing the same thing. He's playing on a third-round deal, and he led the league in receptions and touchdowns last year, or reception yards. So he's looking for a big deal. I don't know why NFL teams do that. If you sign a three-year agreement, you're drafted in the third round, yes, you're supposed to have great numbers, and those great numbers become a good deal in year four when your next contract come up. I'm just not a fan of players that think just because they have one great year that makes a career. It doesn't. It's just one good year.
Oh, I'm 100% with you. And we've seen that with Kyler Murray a little bit. I mean, he's reported for camp, Barry, but, I mean, for heaven's sake, he had one solid season where they finally made the playoffs, and he stunk, mind you, in the playoffs, but he had one really good season. And it's like, hey, guys, I want to get paid the same amount of money as Josh Allen. It's like, dude, pump the brakes for a second. We need to see. And it's not even a contract year. If it were next year and he has another good season, then I think the Cardinals make that commitment. But to come out and say a year before your contract's up, hey, I want to get paid the same amount as Josh Allen has, and I want to get paid this year, I think that was a little bit out of pocket for him to say, because like you said just a second ago, you have one good season, and the player thinks that they're the best player in football when it doesn't work that way.
Yeah, absolutely. I will give you a good quote from Aaron Donald on ESPN. He said, by winning a Super Bowl, you get kind of a little addicted to it. I want to feel that again. I ain't going to lie. That experience is like none other. If I was to play, it's just to win another Super Bowl. But at the end of the day, it's still a business, and it got to make sense to me and my family. All he's trying to say is, look, I'm interested in playing. You know, he's a three-time Defensive Player of the Year. I don't know why the Rams here are hee-hawing around. I know that they're in cap hell right now. That's why they kept trading out of the first round like they did. And, of course, they bargained their future by getting all these, you know, retreads and all these veterans that had still life in them, like Von Miller. But the Rams probably don't have the money to pay him. They would need to restructure some contracts. They would probably, like Matthew Stafford, they would need to probably cut some people. They haven't re-signed Odell Beckham Jr. because they just don't have the money for it. But he wants to play. He's a football player, and they want him to play for him. All 32 teams want Aaron Donald. The Rams have him. The Rams can keep him. All they have to do is meet his price. And it's a matter of, I'm offering this, he wants this, and they'll meet somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, I really wish the Rams didn't have him last year because had he not been there on that last play where it was fourth down, I think Joe Burrow hits Jamar Chase on a home run and they win the game late. But neither.
Absolutely.
And I think that's the worst part of the whole thing to me. And there, I found it interesting. I was following, or I followed the Bengals play-by-play announcer on Twitter, and he said, okay, so for the first time in since Super Bowl Sunday, I'm watching the game back again. And he was noting some things that happened throughout the game. And the one play, obviously, that has been talked about over and over and over again, and even Joe Burrow was asked about it during minicamp, and he said, yeah, yep. I had checked to Jamar. I was turning to throw him the ball, but it wasn't – I didn't have enough time. Like, it was – It makes it hurt a little bit more when they say, yeah, I had checked to Jamar and I was going to throw him the football. I knew he was open. I knew mm-hmm. it was a touchdown. But obviously Aaron Donald being the type of player he is. Look, is Aaron Donald to you, Barry? You obviously been covering the NFL for longer than I have, but and know it to a whole different degree. But is Aaron Donald really the best defensive player that you've ever seen? Or would you put maybe LT or Deion Sanders maybe ahead of Aaron, or is he actually the best defensive player or best player that you've ever seen?
Well, he's probably in the top five best defensive linemen that I've ever seen.
Okay.
I don't think I would call him the best defensive player because, you know, everybody's got their own niche going on because you take LT, even though he was listed as a linebacker, he was really a pass rushing defensive end. Hey, I don't think he ever dropped back to pass. But you take somebody like Dick Butkus, Ray Nitschke, Jack Ham, Jack Lambert. I mean, those are guys that were in the dirt, that played hard at linebacker. And then you've got cornerbacks like Ronnie Lott. I think he's probably one of the greatest defensive backs I've ever seen. But Aaron Donald could be definitely in the top five as far as defensive linemen of all time. And we're talking about, you know, thousands and thousands of guys that have played not only defensive line, but have played at a high level. We're talking about Deacon Jones and Michael Strahan and, you know, the Fearsome Foursome and also the Purple People Eaters. Those were units that were just thick, absolutely thick with linemen. Of course, Deacon Jones is the one that came up with the name Sack, but he was with Merlin Olsen. But you take units that were completely thick. All four guys were all pro guys. But I would definitely put him in the top five.
I think that I mean, he's one of the most dominant players that I've ever seen. I mean, J.J. Watt, I would say, is actually up there as well. Aaron Donald's probably better than J.J., but I think J.J., as far as pound for pound, I mean, he's just as good as some of these other guys who you mentioned. I want to jump to the Browns real quick. So it's interesting.
All right.
You obviously cover the Browns more in depth than any other team, but
yeah.
We've seen this whole Deshaun Watson situation with the 23rd and soon to be apparently 24th woman added to this civil lawsuit case that people are thinking, well, the NFL really needs to get a hold of things and they need to do it quickly. You've always been in the mindset that the NFL is going to wait really to do anything until next year. Dan Graziano of ESPN had said there actually may be a chance that Baker plays week one. Now, obviously, the NFL is going to make a decision. Do you think, I thought about this yesterday, should the NFL suspend him indefinitely until they figure this out? Or is this something where they should say, let him play, and we're going to, as soon as we figure everything out, we're going to do it? Is it too far to say we're going to suspend Deshaun Watson indefinitely until we get our investigation figured out, until we've heard all of these civil cases individually to make our decision, and then we'll go from there? Or is it more realistic for them to just say Deshaun can play and we're going to wait until we hear everything to make a decision on whether to suspend him or not?
Yeah, I've written two articles lately, and one is on the front page of dogsbynature.com. That's dawgsbynature.com. And this one is, it addresses that there's been a 23rd accuser, and it goes in depth about that. And the other one is, I went pretty much in depth as far as asking, will Deshaun Watson play for the Browns this year, 2023, or ever? And my take on that was, is the NFL pretty much going to do whatever they think is best for the league. They're an entertainment business. They don't want to alienate 40% of their fan base, which is women. And if you have 40% that are women as fan base, that doesn't mean that they don't have something to do with the other 60% that they may have to do as far as making them go to games or making them not go to games, mm-hmm. or buying materials or situations like that. But so what if the NFL suspended him for a year this year after they've gone through their investigation? Well, once the civil suits are gone through next year, what if they decide, well, we have found him guilty of that, which he's not been, and what if we give him another year?
Yeah.
What if they give him two? What if they give him five? He hasn't played since the final game of the season in 2020, so it's possible the NFL could do whatever they want to. You take Major League Baseball. They suspended a guy for 2 years, and he wasn't ever found guilty of it. The NFL does situation like that, and they do what they, you know, they have to protect the shield, and they don't want to alienate their fan base.
Yeah, as far as content or conduct detrimental to the league and its image, this definitely fits under
Absolutely.
That category.
Yep.
I just think the whole situation is so interesting, because I almost don't know who to... Obviously, you can point the finger at Deshaun Watson and say, well, man, you know, if you didn't screw this up, if you didn't do this, then you would have no problem and you'd be playing for the Browns. But you look at the Browns go ahead.
Yeah, I understand he hasn't been found guilty of anything. So I really don't understand how the NFL can have a stance that will suspend him for something that he has not been found guilty of. Now, I'm not saying that he's not guilty. I just don't know. But we are in a country that you're innocent and proven guilty, and that system has seemed to work all this time, and I believe in that system. But they can give him a six-game suspension this year. The Browns have already ready for that. You know, he signed a $230 million contract. Well, this year they're only paying him $1.35 million.
Yep, right.
His salary next year is $46 million. So that tells all of us that they are ready for a suspension, and ready for a suspension this year. They haven't gotten rid of Baker Mayfield. That could mean that Baker Mayfield could, who knows, Baker Mayfield can play the entire season. If he does, my prediction is that he'll blow it up and he'll go to the Pro Bowl.
Really? And this obviously, and if he does that, he would further enhance his, he would get back, I would say, a lot of the buy-in that maybe some teams would have had in him, who would be interested in trading for him after that AFC conference championship appearance type of season, as opposed to last year. It would help the Browns out in regards to what they get back for Baker. It would help Baker, I think, a little bit as well, because he could end up going to a team where he's going to play, and then it could very well help a team who's interested. I know I had seen with there was a story on Jameis Winston having a little bit of a limp, obviously coming off that ACL injury, and people were saying, maybe the Saints should look into trading for Baker Mayfield. Is that a situation that you think could potentially come up here, given the question marks about Jameis Winston's health, and obviously Baker Mayfield still being a quarterback who's capable of starting.
Well, the Browns have a couple of choices. One is, let's just say that they've got in their mind that Deshaun is going to be suspended at some point. So they got Jacoby Brissett, who has bounced around from team to team, has had some starts when he's with Indianapolis. He's got the same skill set as Deshaun, being a runner and not a pocket passer. So if you're going to start your season, would you rather start with Baker Mayfield or Jacoby Brissett? And I think the answer to that is Baker Mayfield. I think he's more of an NFL starting caliber player than Jacoby Brissett. So I think the Browns are holding on to him, even if they get calls and offers for him, until the end. And I think the NFL will make a decision before training camp, which is usually about the third week in July. I think we'll know by then. And at that point, because otherwise, I think what the Browns have been doing is just holding on to him in case somebody's starting quarterback gets hurt. Then he's got trade bait, and then he's got value, because right now it's a fifth or sixth rounder plus a bag of footballs, and you know, we got plenty of footballs.
Oh, yeah, 100%. It almost, I don't know, it's a little bit of a funky way about going about it, but they might strike gold. Like, as you said, if a team's starting quarterback goes down in training camp, they all of a sudden get a whole lot more than just that fifth or sixth round pick for Baker Mayfield, a guy that to them may be a little bit expendable, but also if it doesn't happen, then you've got a guy there in case Deshaun Watson does get suspended to come in there and play, and the Browns can still, they're still able to be in that win now mode, Barry, which I think is interesting. So based on the cap stuff, and we can end with this, and then if you have an idiom, we'll hit that afterwards. But based on how much Deshaun Watson is going to be getting after this year, how imperative is it that they try to win this year more than any year, given that he's only getting paid that $1 million as opposed to the $46 next year? Is there going to have to be players cut based on how much Deshaun is making for next year, or is their cap situation good enough, you think, where they can hang on to Deshaun, obviously, and a lot of the other players who they currently have on that team to make them a Super Bowl contender?
Yeah, that's a good question. That's a very good question. Well, every year the cap goes up, but it's not going to go up $46 million. I don't know where they're going to get that money from. I honestly don't, because they've got to keep core players. They cut their starting center, who was an eight-year player for the Browns. He was set to make over $10 million this year, and they cut him, and that was right after they signed Deshaun. Now, they've got a guy who was drafted in the fifth round making fifth-round money instead of $10 million a year that they're going to bring in, but it's going to be problematic from this point on, because they're not going to be able to keep. And you know how a lot of these NFL contracts are, is they get renegotiated, they get restructured. Instead of making his third year, instead of making $48 million, then now he'll make $25 million or whatever it is, so that they can keep players like offensive linemen and running backs and, you know, things that will help him. And I don't know if listeners realize this, but there are two Pensacolians on the Cleveland Browns. One is Martin Emerson Jr., who went to Pine Forest High School. His folks live off of Sorrento Road.
Okay.
And he went to Mississippi State. They took him in the third round.
Yeah.
He's a cornerback. And then a free agent, DeAnthony Bell, played for UWF and played on their national championship team. They signed him as an undrafted free agent. Of course, he's D2 football, but he's the pride of Coach Pete Shinnick. And he is in the safety room, and traditionally the Browns keep four safeties, and they've got five in camp. And I think he's got a good shot of making it. He's a good player, and he's a good hitter.
And we've seen guys who have been undrafted free agents who have come in and really provided a spark that not many thought, but they've ended up making good careers, even out of being like practice squad guys. And not to put a limit on DeAnthony, but there's guys that make livings off being practice squad players, and they are still able to be around the team that they love, and they might even get a chance to come up and play a little bit if somebody goes down. So certainly a good opportunity, obviously, for both of those guys. Do you have an idiom for us today, Barry?
I do. I'm going to give you the term free substitution.
All right.
Now, because soccer and rugby are the godfather, the grandfather and father of American football, a lot of their rules were adopted or they just enacted similar renditions. In soccer, for instance, only three substitutes are allowed for each game, and this is what rugby adopted. Well, when American football started from the game of rugby, they just made similar rules, but they made an adaptation of it. Instead of three players per game, they only allowed one substitute per quarter until the fourth quarter when you could do two substitutes. Well, in 1943, there was a problem having enough players because they were going to World War II and going to the war effort. Their roster cap went from 35 players to just 28 players. And so George Halas of the Chicago Bears recommended a new rule that starting in 1943, that all rosters would have free substitution, but it would only be a temporary measure. Now, this was changed back in 1946 to where you would only get the one substitution per quarter. And then when the All-American Football Conference played from 46 to 49, they had free substitution. And when the Browns, the 49ers, and the Colts were merged into the NFL in 1950, the NFL said, yeah, we like that rule. We're going to keep it. And so in 1950, they did a revision on it, and it's been a mainstay ever since.
Well, there you go. Some long-term history regarding football in general, but even factoring into the NFL as well. Well, Barry, appreciate the time as always. You have a good rest of your week and weekend, and I will talk to you next week.
Sounds good. Go Wahoos.